With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, I'm Gitos Whelan, a Swansea City fan and also contributor to the Jackcast podcast. You can find us at the Jackcast on Twitter.
Hi, I'm Jamie Smith. I host the Burnley FC podcast, No Name Ever, which you can find at nonameever.net.
Hi, guys, I'm Jim. I'm the Leicester City representative for the EPL Roundtable. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. Gitto, we'll start with you, mostly because I want to hear your take on a match that I believe you attended.
OMG.
Was, right? It was the insanity, the 9-goal thriller that was Swansea versus Palace. It was absolutely bonkers from a neutral perspective. What was it like for you?
It was just the craziest game that I've ever witnessed in person ever. We haven't won since the opening game of the season. I worked it out. It's 106 days since we won a game. And then that game just put me through so many different emotions that at full time, I actually couldn't like work out what had happened. It was like you wanted to be happy, but at the same time, you were confused and angry and shocked and all of these other things that were going around. My sister said at the end, she said, I think I'm happy, but I'm not sure. It was just bonkers. It was crazy. First half, we were poor in the first half. We were lucky to go in on level terms. We relied on the genius that is Gylfi Sigurdsson for a stunning free kick. Second season in a row, the Wayne Hennessy's been beaten at his near post by a Gylfi Sigurdsson free kick. But second half, then we came out much stronger, took a 3-1 lead thanks to two Leroy Fair tap-ins. Palace weren't in the game at that stage. They were getting more fouls than touches of the ball. And you're thinking a 3-1 up, you feel, finally, this is going to happen. We're finally going to get the win that we've been waiting so long for. And then with a quarter of an hour to go, Palace make it 3-2. And then they make it 3-3, and then they make it 4-3. And you're just sitting there thinking, oh my God, this actually can't get any worse. I've never been so embarrassed to be a Swans fan as 4-3 in that match. I just thought, this cannot get any worse. We cannot get any more. Just appallingly bad. And then somehow, in added time, two scrappy Fernando Llorente goals just send everybody into meltdown. It was just unreal. And it didn't seem real. It just, I can't remember. Nothing like this has ever happened. There has never been a match like this in the history of Swansea City. Nobody that I've been talking to since then, no matter how old, can remember anything like what we saw on Saturday. As a sort of exhibition of football, it was dreadful. I think 6 of the 9 goals scored came from set pieces. 6 of them were scored inside the 6-yard area. To put that into perspective, I think, we scored 4 inside the 6-yard area. And through the whole of last season, I think we only scored 6 inside the 6-yard area. And that just tells you how scrappy it was and how badly defended the set pieces were. The scoreline could have been anything. And in the end, the Swans won. And about an hour after the game in the pub, it kind of hit me that, yes, we have won a game again. And it's a brilliant feeling. I mean, I'm no more confident of staying up than I was before the game. The performance was dire. The only thing it really confirms is that Crystal Palace are in big trouble this season. But for the time being, I'm just going to enjoy the fact that the Swans have not ruined my weekend for a change.
That seems fair. Are there any significant takeaways we can take away from this match, or should we just kind of put this in a crazy box and ignore it going forward?
Yeah, probably. It just tells you that the Swans and Crystal Palace are two very bad teams. And unless Palace sack Pardew, they're going down. They really are. Their defending was so inept. I mean, ours was too, but our defending's always inept. It was a surprise to see an opposition team that was worse than us, you know. What can we take away from it? Gylfie Sigurdsson's a brilliant set piece taker. He had a hand in every single one of the goals, scoring one and playing the main role in setting up the other four. He's just head and shoulders above everybody else that we've got. And if we did not have him, we'd already be relegated. There's no doubt about it. He's just a fantastic footballer, and probably deserves better than to be at a club like Swansea at the moment. But, you know, it was just a crazy game. It really was. And after the match, players were posting photos of themselves in the changing room celebrating, you know, like you see in most clubs these days. And you saw fans online having a go saying, oh, what, did we win the league or something? Why are you celebrating, you know, that? Why are you celebrating that win and that performance? But the truth is, we haven't won since the start of August. Probably not going to win too many more before me. let's just enjoy the fact that we were able to win the game, and the fact that it was a ridiculously entertaining, chaotic, frantic game. It's something we'll remember for the rest of our lives. You know, you're not going to forget a game like that. It was bizarre, absolutely bizarre. Still trying to get over it. Probably never will. It was just mental, absolutely mental.
Yeah, totally understandable. How have people settled into Bob Bradley as manager of the club? Are people starting to like it? Are they still questioning why Sigurdsson is starting up front when you already signed two strikers?
Yeah, basically that. I'm still not in any way convinced by Bob Bradley. I think his team selection is just guesswork. He changes his formation and personnel massively every week. This was the only time that he has kept the same team, because we were half decent against Everton last week. Until Fernando Llorente came on, we were pretty directionless. I think starting without the recognised striker against a team like Crystal Palace, it doesn't make sense. It just does not make any kind of sense, no matter how you try to explain it. Fernando Llorente came on, and that's when the chaos started. Then that's when Crystal Palace could no longer handle us from set pieces, as soon as we actually had somebody in the box to aim for. And hopefully he learns from this and says, OK, from now on, we will have Llorente up front, or who knows, even Borja, who wasn't even on the bench over the weekend, which, again, is just crazy. I don't think Bob Bradley is any closer to convincing people that he's up to the job. He still looks massively out of his depth, but who knows? He's got a win under his belt. May lead to slight improvements. We don't know, but I still see him as just completely inept and just clueless. I've got to admit, I think that's how the vast majority of fans feel.
Fair enough. Well, hopefully he can do well enough to keep you in the Premier League next season. Jamie, it started so well versus Manchester City. You get the early goal, then you deal with a couple injuries. Unfortunately, a few trundly goals from Manchester City give them the win. But overall, as a neutral, I thought it was a pretty positive performance from Burnley.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well there. Early on, it seemed like we were possibly going to do the same as we did to Liverpool, getting the early goal and defending really well. But the goals that we're conceding at the moment, it's hard to describe. They're just farcical, really. The four we conceded on Monday at West Brom were similar. Two against Man City are just gifts. Like, you come up against a team like City and you think if they beat you and score good goals, they've got very good players, you think fair enough. But we lost that game 2-1 and City didn't really play anything like their best level to do that. One of the goals is Aguero being very good at just reacting, and the second one, it's just hit him and gone in. They've had to do nothing to beat us, and that's what's frustrating for me. I think, obviously, away from home, Burnley've struggled this season. That's no secret. We've got 1 point from, I think, 5 away games, so there's a lot of pressure on our home games, and even though hardly anyone would have backed us to get anything against City, the fact that we came so close suggests it's a bit of a missed opportunity for me. I feel like we should have got something from that game, even though it's difficult to argue we deserved anything with the way we defended for the goals and we didn't really create enough in the second half. I think the injuries obviously make it very difficult. It's hard enough when one of your key players goes off before half-time. When it's two in the space of 5 minutes before half-time, that becomes very difficult. Sean Dyche obviously had to think on his feet a bit with the substitutions. I think he got the second one wrong. James Tarkowski has been playing defensive midfield this season, but he is a centre-back. And I think it sent a message to City when he came on for the second change that we were just going to settle for a point, try and defend for that point. And when you try and do that, it doesn't often work. So while Tarkowski played quite well, and it's no slight on him, at that point I feel like we could have made a more positive change and really had a go at City, because they're not going to play like that very often this season. They were very poor. We made them play poorly, and I don't feel like we took full advantage. So it sounds a bit ridiculous to complain that we lost 2-1 to Manchester City, who might well win the title this season, but I really feel like we could have done more in this game, and hopefully we don't get relegated by a point or two and look back at a game like this as one where we could have got more from it, because at the moment that's really how I feel. But it does seem ridiculous when I think we were 9-1 to win the game. But when you take the lead at home, we've been very good when we've been in front this season. It's very disappointing to ultimately get nothing from the game, especially considering we had two injuries and Tom Heaton was out as well. So it was difficult and City battled, but I'm sick of people talking about our spirit and our character and how well we fight and battle, because we did that 2 years ago, we did that 5 years ago, and we got relegated. I'm not interested in fighting, I'm not interested in battling and scrapping. I want us to get points and get results, and the way we're defending at the moment, we just thought, oh, are we going to do that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, want more actual victories instead of moral victories.
Yeah, exactly. I'd take us playing badly and getting points. I would quite happily swap that. I don't want these plaudits for how well we've given City a game. I'm not interested in that. I'd rather they battered us and we got a point. Like, that'd be fine by me.
Right. And it is understandable. I know you said you don't expect a lot against Manchester City, but you weirdly have a good record against them.
Yeah, well, we took 4 points from the two games in the Premier League last time. Further back, we've taken some real hammerings from City. I remember a 5-0, there was a 6-1 not that long ago. I think the piece 5-0 as well, so over the years, they've beaten us quite heavily. But the two games in the Premier League a couple of years ago, we did do very well. So I think that maybe gave the players a bit of a confidence boost. And my argument is that if you can do that once, there's no reason why you can't do it again. But the belief was maybe a little bit lacking. The second half, I feel like City really were there for the taking. Burnley didn't really create anything. A lot of the football was very direct. City didn't cope that well with the aerial barrage, but you've got to mix it up a bit. It was too many hopeful balls from the back and just hoofing it into the box and hoping. And it wasn't good to watch for me, and sometimes that'll work. I think the goal we scored at the end against Everton was basically a hoof that landed nicely and we ended up scrambling one in, but that's not going to happen all the time. You can't plan for scrappy, horrible goals like that. So, yeah, I think at the moment we need to be a bit more subtle, maybe, especially against the top sides.
Fair enough. And you mentioned the West Brom game, which kind of looked like an outlier. Then it's two goals, and this one's at six in the last two. Do you think this is just regression that was going to come defensively? Because you were in the top 10 pretty much the entire season up to this point. Or do you think that these are a bit more abhorrent than that?
It's difficult to say. I mean, if we go to Stoke next weekend and then concede two or three, and it's similarly soft goals, then it will start to look like this is just what we do. But I think it's more a story of home v away. This season, we've conceded at least three from every away game, apart from Man United, which was 0-0 and arguably should have been another 3-0, 4-0. Tom Heaton had the performance of his life. United missed a couple of very good chances. Ibrahimovic should have had at least one sitter. So it starts to look like a bit of a freak result, whereas at home we have been very solid, very stable, caused a lot of problems on the break, even though we've been at home. So it feels more like, for me, that the tactics away from home just aren't quite working at the moment. But it's obviously a concern. You can't concede six goals in two games and it not be a concern. And when you look at the goals we're conceding, it's just nothing like how you'd expect a Premier League team to say. I mean, all right, some of the defending in Swansea v Palace was as bad, if not worse, but you just can't defend like that and expect to survive. The second goal, City's winner in the end, I think it's probably half a dozen chances to clear that ball, and we didn't do it, and you just can't play like that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, well, now on to Jim. What an interesting week, or just season, it's been on the whole with the contrast between the Champions League and the Premier League. You do go through in the Champions League with, I believe, as many points in the group as you now have in the Premier League on the whole. So I guess just talk us through what has been a very strange period for Leicester there.
Yeah, Jamie was talking about home versus away form for Burnley. I think we've got one competition versus another. Unfortunately, the competition that we're not seemingly doing anything in is the bread and butter of the Premier League. So we're essentially getting panned on a weekly basis now. The Champions League has obviously taken priority, but I'm not sure that can be the be-all and end-all to answer all the questions about why the league form is so poor, because no disrespect to the teams that we have been beaten by in recent weeks, like Watford, West Brom, and obviously a scrappy last-gasp draw with Middlesbrough, which we deserve to lose. I don't think anybody in the stadium that they are on the pitch from a Leicester point of view can have any complaints if we'd have lost that game. I appreciate playing midweek is different for a lot of these players. The motivation and stuff is being questioned, and there must be something more to it than just a tiredness factor. We've got a squad which is looking a little bit threadbare at the moment due to a couple of key injuries. Kasper Schmeichel still out with a broken hand, which he sustained in Copenhagen on the last Champions League away fixture. And then we've got Danny Drinkwater out as well through a very much self-inflicted suspension for an elbow against Watford, which I think just shows how frustrated he was at the fact that he's probably one of the only players this year to come out of any credit. And then we turn up against Middlesbrough with Andy King and Daniel Amate in central midfield, and basically they run through us for half an hour, completely bossed the middle of the park. We barely had a kick and deservedly went behind. And basically we only came back into the game when we got a questionable penalty towards the end of the first half. We then started to kick on a little bit second half and looked like we might get ourselves into the game, but again, a stupid defensive error where Robert Huth and Christian Fuchs have absolutely no idea who's doing what, and basically let a long ball over the top, which used to be a hard tactic, completely flummoxed them. And Alvaro Negredo, who is far from Usain Bolt, strolls in behind our back four and slots the ball past Ron Robert Ziegler, who isn't covering himself in glory, I must admit, at the moment. He's a young goalkeeper and obviously coming in from the Bundesliga, doesn't have a lot of Premier League experience, and he's kind of been thrust into the spotlight perhaps a little bit sooner than Claudio Ranieri would have liked when we signed him. But the whole point of signing your backup is that they're supposed to come in and do something, you know, approximately a decent job. And he's struggling a little bit. I think he's not quite as much of a commanding presence as Kasper is. And I think the defence is showing that signs of weakness and nervousness based off the back of that. I certainly think there's stuff to work on for the guys in training. We haven't got a midweek game this week. So fingers crossed we're able to get those ironed out. But yeah, going back to Saturday, it was essentially another last gasp effort. We basically threw everyone forward, and that's testament to the fact Wes Morgan had the ball at his feet on the edge of the 18-yard area going into the last minute of injury time. Gets brought down by a kind of brainless challenge by De Roon. I don't know what he's thinking. He must be so disappointed in himself, because he played pretty well up until that point and then just literally gave it away. And Soleimani managed to put it away because we'd taken Mahrez and Vardy off at that point. So the kind of penalty duties went back to him. Put it away calm as you like. And we burgled it, essentially. How we got a point out of that game. The highlights, actually, that I watched today made it look like quite an even contest. In reality, we very, very rarely did anything. And we were very, very lucky to get away with a point. Some big improvements need to be made. And, you know, it's difficult at the moment because we have got injuries, but Claudio's got to find a solution. It's all very well when you're winning every game and, you know, going on a really good run. But, it's, you know, this is where he's going to earn his money, so to speak, because he's got these difficult factors that he's not really had to deal with before. And that's what makes you the mark of a good manager, essentially. So I think it's time for him to get things together as well.
Yeah, I hate to go all the way back to the very beginning of your thing when you were saying that it was like Jamie's home and away splits with you in the Premier League and the Champions League. But don't worry, you also have those home and away splits in the Premier League. Leicester currently with the worst away defensive record in the league, which is astounding considering how good you were down the back end of last season.
And also, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive to be worse than Burnley in that department. So, well done.
And I'm sure Gittell will be surprised it's worse than Swansea and Palace after yesterday as well. So is there anything to this, or is this just like a weird statistic? Because it's crazy how ineffective you've been away from home. And the part of that narrative was how great you had been at home. You actually had the second best home defensive record. But then, you know, yesterday happened against a Middlesbrough attack that calling it middling would be praising.
Yeah. I wish I knew the answer, because I think I'd be a very rich man if I did. It's so difficult to put your finger on, because obviously the goalkeeper is injured at the moment. Kasper is out, and he is such a big part of that back five. But it's essentially the same four players that were keeping us at the top of the Premier League week in, week out, shutting out teams and playing gritty kind of backs to the wall football and just coming up with the goods every single week. Christian Fuchs, Robert Huth, Wes Morgan and Danny Simpson. And it's just, I don't know, perhaps it is a motivational thing. There's a lot of fans pointing to the fact that all these players have got new contracts. One of the first things we did in the summer before we kind of went out on a recruitment drive was to bump up the contracts of, you know, pretty much everyone in the side, which you can say, yeah, fair enough, they deserve that after winning the league. But a lot of people are now using that as a stick to beat people with, essentially, to say, maybe the motivation is a factor. Mark Albrighton did a post-match interview after the game on Saturday and did highlight the fact that playing Wednesday, Sunday or Tuesday, Saturday is proving a challenge. But again, that's something you knew is happening 3 months in advance. If you think your squad isn't deep enough, then go and sign more players. And we did have some recruitment in the summer, but we didn't have as much as a lot of people thought we would, I think. We did spend a lot of money up front. We're now looking really, really threadbare in the midfield. And I think basically it's coming down to that. I don't think it's necessarily the defence. I think it's the fact that the opposition are able to create so many more chances per game because of the fact they're just able to run through us in central midfield. Obviously, Kante is a huge miss. He's, you know, for me, he was probably the player of the season last year in terms of the league. And I think he's so underrated in what he does. And you're seeing his effect now at Chelsea, playing in that kind of double pivot in the central midfield with Matic. Where, you know, they're just looking unstoppable, and their recent kind of defensive switch to that 3-4-3 with those two playing the central midfield role has led to so many clean sheets and wins and stuff, and I don't think that's a coincidence. We just haven't replaced him with anyone vaguely close to his ability, and that therefore Danny Drinkwater isn't able to perform at the level that he was last year. And again, that's putting pressure on the defence, and it's just, you know, they're creaking. They're another a year older. That none of them are particularly young. I think Simpson's the only one under 30, and I think he's 29. So it's not exactly a youthful setup at the moment. It's just a case of, you know, I don't know what we do to iron the kinks out. And I think that's probably what makes it worse, because Casper isn't necessarily going to be back for a little while. We don't know. He's back in training, but I suppose with a broken hand, you have to take these things slowly. So there's no guarantee he's going to be back by Sunderland next weekend. I think maybe it's organisation. The one thing that we seem to be struggling with most of all is set pieces at the moment. We didn't concede a set piece goal on Saturday, but up until then, you know, we've been absolutely overrun at set pieces. And that was our real strength last year, that we actively wanted to encourage teams to throw kind of balls into the area, because that was where we thought we were strongest with that centre back partnership. And it's just not happening this year. It's, you know, as Jamie pointed to with Burnley, just these kind of completely brainless, nonsensical errors are just creeping into our game. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of working out, but I hope for our sake we do it sooner rather than later, because the form that we're in, it's not going to take many more results like that against teams that in reality everyone thinks we should be beating. And you're then faced with a really tough run of fixtures further on down the league, needing points to stop yourselves looking over your shoulders.
Yeah. Well, from Jim, whose Leicester side have been very good in the Champions League, to Tottenham, who... The other thing, very disappointing from us in the Champions League, getting beaten by Monaco again was not the way that we wanted to go out. Did have somebody ask me how many goals we'd need to score against CSKA to be able to continue. That's not how the Champions League works. It's head-to-head, and we're tied with Leverkusen, who beat us. So that is why it is the death knell is already there. We did not put out our best 11. I might say it all, maybe the first Monaco match. But since then, it's been a whole lot of rotation. And for those people that last year during the Dortmund match said that this was concerning, if this was Pochettino's approach to European competition, and I was like, calm down, you know, this isn't the Champions League, this is the Europa League. We got a tough draw. It was during a tough run in the Premier League. This just wasn't what our priority was. I think I owe all those people an apology, because clearly that was continuing to be the approach, which was continue to rotate, see if we can field the best team possible in both competitions. And it did not work on either front, as we neither beat Monaco to keep the Champions League glory hopes alive, nor did we beat Chelsea at the weekend. Granted, both of those matches were very difficult, but it kind of feels like we hedged our bets and ended up losing both. But the Chelsea match was not as frustrating as people were reacting. I think the loss really like flipped the crazy switch in people. But it really wasn't that bad of a performance on the whole. Seeing Eriksen get back on the score sheet was very good. I think the most concerning, well, there are two really big concerning things taking away from this Chelsea match. The first is, and I've referenced this before, but who's going to score the second goal? Our defense is very good. Rarely will we let in more than one. And if we do, it'll be two basically max. So if we let in one, who's going to score the second to win it? If we allow two, who's going to score the second to tie? And I just don't know where that goal is going to come from. Missing Lamella is huge. We missed Danny Rose in this one. We were missing Toby Alderweireld in this one. But you only have so many excuses. And I've seen people saying, well, every team deals with injuries, and so there's no reason to complain, which I completely agree with. Injuries happen to every team. The problem is that last year they did not happen to us. And so then you have to start wondering, is that why we were able to find the success that we were? That we were able to identify what our best 11 was fairly early in the season and just basically rolled them week in and week out to great success, save for Vertonghen's two-month injury layoff, where Wimmer stepped in and did a very excellent job, which, while we're talking about Wimmer, he has not done over the last 2 weeks or so when he's been involved, granted, at left back versus Chelsea. Which was always going to be a concern with Victor Moses apparently being good now. So it's frustrating. The Chelsea result won for sure. I will say, from a non-on-the-pitch standpoint, with Mourinho gone and Terry basically gone and no Fabregas, I kind of hate Chelsea less I've always loved Antonio Conte. I think he's perpetually underrated as a manager. And I also saw some people complaining like, oh, of course we had to play Chelsea during this run where they had conceded no goals in six straight wins. Fortunately, we did score a goal against them. But we also got to play Liverpool early in the season before they really caught their stride. So it's just going to neutralize over a year the balance of scheduling. Because I don't know, I don't want to let you guys in on too much insider info here, but every team plays everyone else twice. So
no way.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy stuff. There was an embargo. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for this. But anyway, so I'm not going to complain about that. I thought it was an admirable performance from us. I really do. Those two questions are the main ones, though. Is who's going to score aside from Kane? And, well, I guess now that it's just the Premier League, I don't think we're going to try too hard in the Europa League. But I did say at the beginning of the season that this would be the perfect Europa League year for us, because you bring in Janssen, who needs confidence, needs to play against some lesser opposition. The likes of Onuma and Winks and Cameron Carter-Vickers, all those guys would really benefit from playing in Europe. We'd be able to use them there, play our best team in the Premier League, and now we're going to have a chance to do that. I think we'll probably just play the kids against CSKA or CSKA, whatever you want to call them, in the last Champions League match, and then kind of see what happens. If they make it through, we'll do the draw, see who we get. Few teams have more Europa League experience than us, so maybe we'd actually go for it in that instance, but all in all, not too concerned. It looked midweek like we were going to try to cancel the trial period with Wembley to be able to play our Europa League matches at White Hart Lane. Pochettino and or Daniel Levy shut that down. The quotes coming out of the club sounding something along the lines of, we need to get used to playing at Wembley because we're going to play there all year next season. So we do need to get acclimated to that. So it's been a very frustrating week for Tottenham, but I think there are a lot of positives that people are missing. And so this is the week on the swing where everybody's going to say I'm too optimistic and naive. And then next week when we do something like win and say to not get carried away, then I'll be super negative. Just to let you guys know where on that spectrum I'm going to constantly fall as a Spurs fan. All right, and now we are about half an hour into the show, so why don't we get into the topic? There have been so many formational changes in the Premier League. Everybody's throwing out threes at the back, five at the back. We're seeing some diamonds. We're seeing some false nines up front. It's hard to keep track of, even for people that do this all the time, like the guys on this show right now. So I thought it'd be interesting to just walk us through what your club is doing at the moment and maybe some players that it hurts and helps with your new formations and or tactics.
Well, at Swansea over the last few weeks since Bob Bradley turned up, it's just been all changed pretty much every week. This is the first week we've actually stuck with the same 11 and same formation for 2 weeks in a row. I think that was just so that people didn't lose their minds through chopping and changing. It's actually been a bit of a theme actually for longer than that with us. Gwendolyn was very bad at it, and Gary Monk before that was quite had developed some nasty traits of chopping and changing and just choosing random formations in the hope that it would work. Swansea's a pretty bad club to discuss this point on, because, you know, like I said, our manager's just doing it by guesswork. There's no real plan in place. And the bottom line is that with us, constantly changing the lineup is helping nobody. Nobody can get used to the players that they're playing alongside. Nobody is, nobody has any time settled in any particular formation or to actually get used to it and know what they're doing. So, it's a lesson. If you are down the bottom, don't just change everything from one week to the next. You have to at least bite the bullet and stick with something, even if it's not perfect. You just have to, at some point, say, okay, this is what we've got. This is what we're sticking with. We're going to try and make it work for the next few games. But the one thing I will say is, if you do want to change it constantly from week to week, make sure your best players are playing in the best position. Don't play Gylfi Sigurdsson up front on his own. Don't, you know, play Leroy Fair and holding midfielder. Not that I'm suggesting he's one of our best players by any means. But, you know, if you are going to chop and change, you should be doing it to get the best out of players. playing Gylfi Sigurdsson on the wing, playing Gylfi Sigurdsson up front, playing Leon Britton in a four-man midfield. Play, you know, these kind of decisions, it just infuriates me. But then, you know, you look at someone like Conte at Chelsea, playing Victor Moses at wing-back, and you think, oh, well, you know, every now and again you do stumble on something that seems crazy at first, but then seems to work. So I guess, what do I know on this subject?
Don't want to concern you too much, but maybe as much as Bob Bradley. Jamie, what about Burnley?
Yeah, it's weird for us because last season, obviously, won the championship playing 4-4-2 pretty much every week. But this season, we've played 4-5-1 more than 4-4-2. So for nerds like me who like talking about tactics, it's been great because there's been some tactics to talk about rather than the same all the time. It does mean, however, that Andre Gray is not getting a look in at the moment. Now, obviously, that's his own stupid fault for getting banned for 4 games for sending stupid tweets years ago. So it's difficult to have sympathy for him. But he is probably our main goal threat, even though he's only scored once in the league so far this season. And I do feel if we are going to stay up, we need to get him back in the team. And with a 4-5-1, it's difficult to see how that's going to happen because he really needs support up there. He's not suited to playing a lone striker role. And it would probably be a waste if we asked him to play out wide. And I'm also not sure he'd do the defending required from the dash lights from his wingers, so we're in a bit of a bind at the moment. Results were quite good, playing the 4-5-1 while Gray was suspended. We've obviously had 2 defeats in the last 2 games, which may prompt a little bit of a rethink. We're at Stoke next weekend. I think they play a 4-2-3-1, which seems to be very popular around Europe at the moment, so it'll be interesting to see what Dash has up his sleeve, because I think the point about playing players in the right position is a really important one, and I'm not sure we're doing that at the moment. We spent £10 million on Jeff Hendrick, who fans seem quite upset with so far. He's certainly not looked like a £10 million player, although my argument is that that's not really his fault. He didn't decide he was worth £10 million. Burnley Football Club did, so don't shout at him for that. But we're playing Hendrick almost as a 10 at the moment. He doesn't really seem suited to it. He's not very good with his back to goal. He needs to be going forward with the ball. So maybe a bit of a rethink would suit Hendrick. And considering we paid all that money for him, we must consider him to be a very important player. So we need to think how we can get the best out of Hendrick. I think getting Gray back in the team is key. So I think a return to 4-4-2 for Burnley is probably going to be on the cards sooner rather than later. But I like seeing all the innovation. I think Conte has been a breath of fresh air with a 3-4-3 that I don't think we've seen anyone really play in the Premier League before. I love Man City's mad formations, like the 3-2-4-1 they played in Europe in midweek. Although that was insane, but extremely fun to watch. Yeah, I like the variation. Teams playing different systems rather than the same all the time. Like last year, it seemed like everyone was playing 4-2-3-1. It's so boring, like just the same formations all the time. But there's a lot of variation at the moment, a lot of different styles, different types of plan involved. And I think that's good for the league in the end. I think it goes in cycles, doesn't it, this kind of thing. Some things come into fashion. The back three seems to be a bit sexy at the moment. People like trying to play the back three, so maybe that's the time for the back three. But yeah, I like it. I like seeing different formations.
From a team that have changed their formation seemingly every week in Swansea, we've not changed our formation since about 2012. Basically, we've had that 4-4-2 for as long as I can remember. Granted, my memory is not particularly good. But yeah, so the problem is more personnel, I think, rather than approach at the moment. We've got a lot of, I don't know. The thing is, we've actually got quite a top heavy squad at the moment. Like, we've got a lot of attacking players. If you look at our bench on a weekly basis, you've normally got Hernandez and a sub goalkeeper, and then everyone else is either a winger or a striker. Very little midfield cover. We had Matty James actually back on the bench in the last game, which is huge news, given that he's not kicked a ball in about 18 months after going off injured in the last game of the season where we just stayed up. So that's great news for him, and obviously another option for us in the centre of the park, which kind of can't come too soon. The issue, I think, at the moment is that we're struggling to figure out what our best team is. Jamie Vardy is probably the streakiest striker in the league. A testament to that will be his record-breaking run last year. And then he will basically go 3 months without scoring. And he's kind of on one of those runs at the moment where he scored for England against Spain. But he hasn't. He scored one Premier League goal this year. Meanwhile, you've got £30 million Islam Soleimani sitting on the bench on Saturday. Granted, he was coming back from injury. But you've also got Shinji Okazaki, who has come on leaps and bounds and probably is one of the only two players along with Drinkwater that looked anything like half decent this year as well as last year. So I think we're struggling to work out how to fit those guys in. And then you've got, you know, kind of impact players like Gray and Musa and Schlupp sitting on the bench, kind of coming on when we're trying to salvage a point. Potentially we could change it. I don't think Claudio is the type of manager to make those changes unnecessarily, but something has got to change. Perhaps we need to go to a kind of, I don't know, like a 4-5-1 that becomes a 4-3-3 in the same way that Jamie was saying that seemed to be very popular last year, and potentially with the fact that we could pack the midfield out and try not to get overrun quite as much in the centre of the park. Potentially that's an option. I suppose the issue then becomes, who do you play as the one? Because if it's Soleimani, that's fine and he's a target man, but it means you're likely to leave, you know, the other three strikers on the bench because none of them are wingers. You could play Vardy out wide, but that's only going to exasperate his lack of scoring, but then so sitting on the bench. So it's a difficult one. I get a feeling that we won't change it just yet. I've got a feeling that we're so drilled into that 4-4-2 that changing it would cause more problems than it would solve. I think it's more just about working on the nuances of the game. And we've been so effective at it before, I don't think he'll change it just yet, especially with the options that we've got at the moment, kind of threadbare in that centre of the midfield. But it's certainly an option, I suppose, going down the line. It's, you know, we're at, what, a third of the way through the season now. So there is an option there to change it down the line if we need to. But I just think, yeah, it's a difficult one. It's not a task that I envy because obviously, you know, Claudio watches the players every week in training, but we just can't get an attacking formation that seems to give us any fluency at the moment. And that's causing major issues because it's just putting pressure on the midfield and the defence. And that's kind of what's leading to kind of negative results at the moment.
Hmm. Yeah, Tottenham, we have been changing things maybe too much. It's five different formations in five matches for us now. And a lot of it is because we're dealing with injuries. I mentioned before, I think Eriksen is the one that suffers the most because when you're not playing a 4-2-3-1, you're asking even more from Eriksen to cover more ground, whether or not he's on the wing or maybe he's having to sit a little bit further back than usual. It just doesn't really seem to be suiting him. I think with our best 11, as unsexy as it may be, Jamie, I think a return to the 4-2-3-1 would help us. But there would have to be a change, and it's a dangerous one, which is I think we would need to swap out Wanyama for Dier. Now, Wanyama, I think, is one of the best pure defensive midfielders in the Premier League, but he offers nothing else. Eric Dier is a capable passer of the ball from midfield, which combined with Dembele's dribbling and strength made a very good duo in the Premier League last season. While Wanyama can mop up more than Dier and is better in that role single-handedly, I think it actually diminishes our creativity going forward. Lamela coming back, obviously, on the right would be huge for us. We wouldn't have to be playing people out of position over there. But then you do have to ask, you know, the question of, with the way Son had been playing, although he has not really kept up that form. In fact, he probably should have had two goals against Monaco in a match where we did not score two goals. We do have to fit those four players in there once Lamela gets back, between Lamela, Eriksen, Ali, and Son. And I think Son's pace is going to earn him a spot just because we need that. It's something that we desperately lack from our other options. But yeah, for me, I think a 4-2-3-1 would work well for us. I will say my hesitancy about playing three at the back is the reliance on Walker and Rose as wingbacks. But I will freely admit that may be a concern based on my opinions of them from years past and not really thinking about how good each of them are at the moment. But I would still be hesitant, really, thinking about the two of them being our only width there. So we'll see how it goes. And it would be so harsh for Wanyama because he's done nothing wrong other than just be a singularly focused player, where I think Dyer offers a little bit more more well-roundedness, for lack of an actual word. Which is surprising because, you know, Dyer was a center back. But you can tell his form has dipped a little bit since being shifted to center back. Part of that is that he was paired with Vimmer, who clearly is not at the level he was last year. Safer, the editor of this show, saying, you know, maybe what we saw in Vimmer last year was really kind of the spillover from Toby being so great right next to him. But, yeah, I think 4-2-3-1 would be what I would do for now and, you know, return to what we did last year and see if we can't recreate what we did last year. All right, and now we will head into Player Watch, where we will quickly talk about a player that impressed and one that disappointed for us at the weekend. If nobody disappointed for you, then you can, of course, praise somebody from the opposition. Gitto, we'll start with you. I'm going to guess that you aren't going to praise some of the defenders, but might praise some of your players in attack.
Defenders are definitely not deserving of praise on either side of that contest on Saturday.
Maybe they don't even deserve to be called defenders at that point.
They really don't. They didn't do anything. They just opened the gate for the other team. They really did. I think it's tough to pick out the player who really was worse than everybody else, but I'll go for Federico Fernandez. He's not very good. I mean, whenever you see Fernandez play for the last like year or so, you've been expecting a mistake at some point. You've been expecting him to just mess up and lose focus, and he just never had focus against Crystal Palace. I mean, the amount of times that he lost his marker for goals, it's incredible. I mean, Neil Taylor didn't have a great game, didn't have a very good game either. He was at fault for the first one where Zaha just bumps him off when he overcommits. But Federico Fernandez, for some of those set pieces, he's meant to be marking Benteke. Actually, it was interesting because Benteke was also marking Fernandez at the other end, and Benteke was equally bad at marking him, which is why we scored the fifth goal. It's fascinating. It really is. It's brilliant to watch. But yeah, Fernandez was probably our worst defender. In terms of somebody who stood out, there's Gylfie Sigurdsson is the obvious one. Scored a stunning free kick in the first half. Two great deliveries for our second and third goals. His shot is turned in by Llorente for the fourth, and then for the fifth one. I mean, it's very difficult to put a decent ball into the box from a sort of central position 40 to 50 yards out, but that's exactly what he did. His dead ball, I mean, his ability from dead balls situations, I really don't know how many better players there are in this league at it. It's just a shame, actually, that apart from when we play against Crystal Palace, we don't have too many players in the team who can attack those great deliveries and really make the most of them. But he's absolutely stunning from free kicks and corner situations. He's just so good. And he stood out massively against Palace. He really did.
Yeah, it's difficult to pick out individuals from Burnley's performance against Man City, really. I mean, everyone did okay. I felt like in the first half, our best player was probably Dean Marnie. Obviously, he scored a fantastic goal, his first Premier League goal in 7 years, which is my time, really. The number of times he goes to shoot from those sorts of positions and hits someone in row Z, it's probably about time that one went in like that. But yeah, excellent, excellent goal from Dean Marnie. And I felt like when he went off, we really missed him in midfield, especially given our lack of depth in midfield. Hopefully the re-signing of Joey Barton will sort that in January. Fingers crossed that will all go through nicely. Disappointing. You could probably pick out one of the defenders. Some of the defending was just appalling. Don't really want to think about the defending anymore, though. So I'm going to pick on George Boyd. I'd bigged him up before the game. He scored in both games against Man City in the Premier League 2 years ago. So it felt like quite a wise selection. He obviously is a player who raises his game for these sorts of matches, but he just offered absolutely nothing. I was looking through the stats for something else, and he touched the ball 22 times in 90 minutes against City. And this is a guy who's meant to be one of our four attacking players in the team. 22 touches, incidentally, was the same as Di Marni managed in his 40 minutes on the pitch. And Di Marni's leg fell off after half an hour. So George Boyd was an absolute passenger. He got in his 10 miles as normal. But in terms of actual impact on the game, there was nothing. And I think patience is starting to run out for George Boyd. But unfortunately, with Goodmunson now injured, Scarfield's in poor form as well. We don't really have any good wingers at the moment. So that's great.
In terms of Leicester, it's, as Jamie kind of alluded to with Bennett, it's very slim pickings in terms of the positives. I think the only player who kind of came out of the game with any credit was Shinji Okazaki. And that's been a theme of our season, as I said earlier on. He looks a lot more lively this year. He looks more aware. I think his game awareness and his general kind of pace of play looks finally up with the Premier League. I think coming in from the Bundesliga, he didn't necessarily catch up quite as quickly as people expected him to, because I think some people do draw parallels between the two in terms of like the physicality and the pace that some teams play at and stuff and high pressing. But he looks a million dollars better than the player he was last year. And you know, he wasn't a bad player last year by any stretch of the imagination. He just needs to he needed to just be stronger in the tackle. Like, he isn't the biggest physical player, but I think what he's learned to do is use his body to shield the ball a bit more now, so that he's offering an option when he gets his the ball with his back to goal. He's not losing every 50-50 challenge. He's not being shrugged off the ball by these big kind of bulky Premier League defenders that have got 4 or 5 inches in height and God knows how much in weight on him, and that are trying to lean him off the ball at times. So yeah, he played pretty well. I'd say did what he's expected to do. He's very energetic and he makes things happen in terms of pressing the opposition back four. He did have a good chance halfway through. I think it was just coming to the end of the first half, and he had a kind of scissor kick, very similar to a goal he scored against Newcastle last season, actually, when we were kind of on a decent run. And I think he scored one against Norwich like that as well last season. But he's in and around the box and he's making chances and stuff. He's just not quite as clinical as some of the others, although his scoring record is, but I think he's got as many goals this year as he got the whole of last year already. So that is an improvement, I guess. Negatives, I could talk about most of the team, to be honest. I think Christian Fuchs is probably the biggest upset for me. Like, he's normally such a classy player, and I think he's one of the best signings we've made in the last few years, alongside Kante and Cambiasso when we had him. I think it amazes me he was on a free transfer. He's a Rolls Royce for fullback normally, and he's got this long throw that just causes so many problems in opposition areas because of how tall we are and like sending the centre backs forward. Basically, any throw within 30 yards of the opposition goal line kind of becomes a corner. We can put so much pressure on. And yeah, positionally, he's normally just so aware and so calm on the ball, and that just seems to desert him yesterday. He was, you know, and he gets frustrated with himself. And, you know, I understand why, because he's got exceptionally high standards. And he's just signed this new contract, which is brilliant news, but he just didn't perform anything like what we expect of him yesterday. I think he's culpable for the second goal. Between him and somebody's got to be tracking Negredo there. You can't get caught out by a guy, you know, who plods in behind you, nothing more than a kind of quickish dash rather than lightning pace. It's not like he's facing Theo Walcott and he's getting left for dead over 10 yards. Fuchs isn't slow. Positionally, we were just all over the place. We gave the guy a 5 or 6 yard head start, and you can't do that against a half decent striker. I think he was the kind of player I was upset the most with. But there are plenty of other candidates that I could name, not least Romrod Ziegler in goal. I think positionally he just needs to work on that a little bit more, getting beat at his near post and then across his near post yesterday in the last couple of weeks is a worrying sign. So yeah, I think Fuchs takes it for me just, but it's close.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't such a bad performance from us, although I do think Wimmer got a bit undone by Victor Moses, which as soon as I realized that was what was going to happen, went all in on Victor Moses in DFS lineups. obviously that ended up working out from that standpoint. Not so fun as a fan, obviously, of Tottenham. But Wimmer just has not been up to snuff this season after he looked very impressive last season. At the start of this season, he wasn't even being named in the squad on match days, and everybody was freaking out about us losing such a talented young player, and are we just going to sit him until he leaves? And, you know, now starting to see maybe why he requires a little more seasoning and why he wasn't as involved earlier in the year. It was very good to see Christian Eriksen getting a little bit back to where he's been in years past. He was the player with the most shots on target without a goal in the Premier League, so eventually it was going to come from a statistical standpoint, although I never particularly jumped on that train because he has looked largely awful this season. So very good to see him back in and amongst the goals. I think Lamella coming back will help him a lot. I think having another creator on the pitch will help distract from what he's trying to do to defenses. But was pleased with Eriksen, was pretty disappointed in Wimmer, although, to be fair, Wimmer was out of position, but he has been disappointing on the whole thus far this season. All right, and that will do it for this episode of the EPL Roundtable. So, guys, if you'd like to tell the folks where they could find you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
I'm Gittos Willen, a member of the Jackcast podcast, and we will be recording sometime this week, and you will be able to listen to that by clicking on our Twitter page at the Jackcast.
I'm Jamie Smith. I'm Burnley FC fan, and I host the No Name Ever podcast. We record Mondays, so this week's episode will probably be out Tuesday or Wednesday. You can find that at nonameever.net or follow us on Twitter at nonameevernet.
Thanks, guys. I've been Jim. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88. I'm the gaming content manager for Perform, which is a company who have a lot of kind of football portals like Goal.com and Soccerway. And Opta as well. So if betting's your thing, then check us out on various different Twitter accounts and stuff and see the content that we're pushing out to cover all the football ahead of this weekend.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, at Kevroff on Twitter. There's a championship show and an FPL show on the same channel that you should be sure to go check out. Also, I write for TheEaglesBeak.com. That's going to be an adventure of a website this week. So if you want to see any of the fallout from that, and I assume lots of party out comments, go check those out over there. Also, check out PlayTaga.com if you like the draft versions of Fantasy Premier League games. And VIPBet.com, where we do DFS stuff, me and Rob Langevin, who's my partner and co-host over there on the FPL Roundtable. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.